excited with that music reverberating in the background one last time. And we're back. Welcome to another, the final MCU review episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I am your host, Mike. This is my co-host, also Mike.
Also Mike here, very proud of us.
We have our capes on, our masks. We've been shooting webs out of our wrists all morning. Nothing's happened. It's just been really weird. Two grown men flicking at each other.
This has pulled out the child in us. This series. We did all those snooty, bougie Oscar movies.
Nose in the air movies.
Off-season superhero movies. Pew, pew. But, you know, we found a lot of good ones and a lot of really strong screenwriting principles. We learned a lot about movie making, the Disney magic touch on full display in this episode for sure.
Yeah, still seeing how the MCU overcame some shortcomings. The rocky start with the Incredible Hulk. Yeah. Maybe a disappointing Thor entry to being now where these are just total movie events. They take over the landscape. Obviously, the countdown to Infinity War has been all over social media for about a week now. Everybody's glowing and gushing about it. Yeah, these are full-fledged pop culture phenomenon.
And I think all of us are now, we could spend your $10 billion, you know, because we've watched these 18 movies and we've analyzed it. So if there's a movie studio out there that wants to hire us, I think we know how to spend, you know, DC's next $10 billion.
The first billion is strippers and crack. Oh, that's, you got to get the ideas going. You got to get the... We're here for the final three movies of the MCU, number 16, 17, and 18 in the pipeline before Infinity War comes out technically tonight. If you're listening to this on a Thursday afternoon, if you're watching it tomorrow or listening tomorrow, you're going to go to the movies tomorrow, Friday. April 27th is the day that has been in our hearts and minds for, I would say, about 3 months since they actually changed it from May 4th. But yeah, Spider-Man Homecoming, Black Panther, and in there is Thor Ragnarok, and we're going to cover those three today like we've been doing. So without any further ado, like a champion in a galactic Roman Colosseum, also Mike is going to be here to fill us in with some specs to start for Spider-Man Homecoming.
Cast and crew for Spider-Man Homecoming. The director is John Watts from the TV series The Fuzz, Onion Sports Dome, The Onion News Network, and films Clown and Cop Car. So another eclectic Marvel choice here.
Marvel has really, that's the biggest thing I think I've learned so far, is how they've gone off the beaten path and made just studs out of these directors, giving them the money and the freedom to kind of flex their wings. They have to stay within the Marvel vision, right, as we saw with Edgar Wright having some issues with that, with Ant-Man production, et cetera, but man, if you can work within those parameters, you are a bona fide stud for years to come.
I mean, they want good storytellers, right. I think is when it's the bottom line. They don't care if you've made horror movies, you've made dramas, like Kevin Bacon cop car dramas.
Community.
I mean, they don't care if you made comedies. If you could tell a story, if you can compose a scene, you know, they're in. And that's what's been working for them. And obviously, I think all these guys, all these, you know, fledgling directors that are on the fringe of breaking out, they have come to Marvel with serious passion about their favorite childhood comics.
And it's just like a perfect storm because everyone was raised, of course, on these cartoons and comics. It was the sweet spot of that late 80s, early 90s, where now everyone's the adults and coming up in the entertainment world. It's brilliant to see.
And I do think Disney and Marvel, they also like to get that bargain.
Oh, there's no doubt. Bang for the buck, absolutely. Yeah.
They like to be so super right at the end of the day. Because, you know, you get a lot of big names associated with these projects all along. And then, and John Watts was also being considered, right?
Let's make our stars instead of relying on other people's star powers. Yeah, sure. We can drive the bus, sure.
Writing credits for Spider-Man Homecoming go to Jonathan Goldstein, who's penned Horrible Bosses 2, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, and the remake of Vacation. Longtime actor John Francis Daly was his writing partner on this, all the same movies with Goldstein. Also wrote the incredible Burt Wonderstone. And as an actor, Daly is best known from Freaks and Geeks, Boston Public, Kitchen Confidential, and Bones. So you'd recognize his face if you saw him.
And he has time to be on the PGA Tour as an alcoholic.
Oh, yeah.
Is that not the same John Daly? We're talking about different John Daly's?
All right. He looks like Raggedy Andy. That's who he looks like.
Okay.
Search him out. Laugh at what I just said. Additional writing credits go to John Watts, Christopher Ford, Chris McKenna, Eric Summers, and all of the comic book writers. Tom Holland stars as Peter Parker / Spider-Man. Robert Downey Jr. is the unlikely mentor character that is Tony Stark. Michael Keaton is a great villain as the Vulture / Adrian Toomes.
Yes.
Jon Favreau returns as Happy. Gwyneth Paltrow is back as Pepper Potts. Chris Evans also has some cameo appearances as Cap. But I did want to spend a little more time because I think this is one of the best casts Marvel has assembled up to this point, certainly for a standalone origin story or anti-origin story kind of starter film.
Yeah, this is one they had to get right, and they really, I think you're right in that they brought up the most important people and kind of put the spotlight in the right places, but they had to. This was Spider-Man's third reboot within the last 15 years, basically.
Right.
A standalone property. They're trying to establish a new Peter Parker. So they really had their chips in the middle of the table, this one.
So right off the bat, you have four comedians, four comic actors in roles where they get a lot of jokes. You have Hannibal Buress as the gym teacher.
Oh, he was good, yeah.
A lot of jokes. The coach of the academic decathlon team from Freaks and Geeks in Silicon Valley is Martin Starr. You have Donald Glover from Atlanta, of course. He's got several jokes. Mm-hmm. You got Hemke Madera from Weeds, is Mr. Delmar, the deli owner. These are all comedians in auxiliary roles, so they get to shine. Then the kids are funny. Zendaya is funny as Michelle.
She is.
Okay, Jacob Batalon is a breakout star as Peter's best friend, Ned. He really wears that hat. But he's the fanboy in all of us.
Yes, he's us on screen. Absolutely. He's our conduit.
The actor's loving his job in this movie. Mm-hmm. So you have those people who are just getting laughs left and right, but you also have great thespians. Marissa Tomei is Aunt May. Jennifer Connelly is the voice in Peter's suit. You've got Kenneth Choi as the principal, Logan Marshall Green as the first shocker, and then Bokeem Woodbine as the next shocker. Mm-hmm. You got Michael Mando from Better Call Saul as, the next villain. He's going to be Scorpion. And he's got a cameo in this. So one of the more balanced casts in recent memory in this film.
Yeah, they spared no expense, as Marvel and Disney are known to do, especially at this point when it came out in 2017. So they're well established. They got people that want to work for them. They know who to pick. So this is firing on all cylinders at this point.
And even the other kids on the academic decathlon team, I didn't mention their names, but they got jokes too.
Yeah, like the Flash character,
This is a very generous script.
Without question.
Box office numbers. The budget for Spider-Man Homecoming, not as much as you'd think. $175 million. You know, you figured it was $200 million, whatever. I mean, you got CG.
Yeah, I mean, the Avengers have been going about $220 million, so $175 million is probably 50 less or so. So that's a bit surprising, but still, not like it's a cheap budget. It's not an indie movie.
Domestic earnings, $334. This is all millions. International earnings, $545.9. Worldwide total was $880 million, $166,784.
Well, clearly, Watt will never work in this town again, not getting $1 billion.
Sixth highest grossing film of 2017.
Good God.
Yeah.
Just print. Do you think Marvel has invested in their own money printing machine yet, or do you think they actually have to like still wait for the U.S. Mint to give them cash?
The currency is not going to be the, what was it, the euro or the Bitcoin?
Yeah.
It's going to be the Mickey.
Yeah, the Mickey. The Scrooge McDuck, if you will.
Critical reception numbers. Rotten Tomatoes gave Spider-Man Homecoming a 92%, 7.7 out of 10 critic score.
We're well past the point of actually criticizing these movies, I think, right, at this point.
They're all fun. 88%, 4.2 out of 5 audience rating. IMDb gave it a 7.5 from 307,000 votes. Metascore was a 73. Cinema score was an A.
Yeah, so like I said, I think Guardians was the turning point. It was a property nobody expected much out of. Maybe Ant-Man you could say the same thing about. As soon as those hit and were big crowd favorites, all bets are off. Marvel can do no wrong. They got the Midas touch.
Midas touch for sure. And awards, though, on this movie. Let me start that again. Awards on this movie, though, few and far between. This was a surprise. Kids' Choice Award to Zendaya for Favorite Movie Actress. That's basically because, I mean, she's good in this as a supporting actress.
Yeah, Kids' Choice Award, come on.
It's a Kids' Choice. Teen's Choice Award for Best Summer Movie and Best Summer Movie Male Star Tom Holland and Best Summer Movie Female Star Zendaya. But she's like a child
star.
She is
popular. Yeah. She is a popular person.
She's barely in this movie, which is fine. I mean, she's great, knocking the supporting role out of the park. But Best Female Star? Come on.
It's the teenage choice.
Yeah, no, she's popular.
This is the most time anyone's ever spent analyzing anything about the Teenage Choice.
Okay, awards. Couple production nuggets, right? We're going to be a full Teen Choice Awards podcast from here on in. Trying to change direction for us. No. Production nuggets. The Sony hack in 2014
yes.
revealed details that Sony and Marvel were trying to broker a deal to share the rights of Spider-Man. This thing fell through in 2014, but a year later, it came to back together, and they basically made some kind of deal, a very complicated math, that as long as the film makes over $800,000, it's better numbers for Disney. There's like a 5% share for Sony. There's also a flat payment for every time Disney uses Spider-Man to Sony.
And you got to think Kevin Feige being a fan of the comics like he is, he had to have this approach that a lot of us have when we're hearing about the workings between Disney and Fox getting this. Whatever. Just give him me.
He's mine. I know how to do it. I definitely read something in Wikipedia where Feige was trying to get these rights since like 2010 or something.
It only makes sense, yeah. And it's kind of the manifest destiny. You can say the same thing about the X-Men. I keep bringing that up, too. It's gonna happen. We're going to get there.
Right. Napoleon Dynamite director, Nacho Libre guy, Jared Hess was initially sought to direct the film. So like I said, big names. The Russo brothers were also in discussion. There's a list of well-known guys, and they eventually went with John Watts.
I just have this vision of the Russo brothers in my head, like laying on these big exotic couches now, being fanned by giant leaves, by mistresses in like Princess Leia slave outfits, fed grapes.
They would release that video too, because they're just for ironic value, even if it's funny.
The like kings of the world right now.
Yeah, so I can't wait. I can't wait to see what they've done with the Avengers.
Really hope it's just Thanos eating foe.
I'm giving them credit for Spider-Man Homecoming. Right now, and it's not Watts. Even John Watts, the nice job. So you got the plot premise?
Yeah, let's talk about Spider-Man Homecoming. Plot premise. We're going to start at the Stark/Avengers Tower renovation after the events of Ultron, Civil War, and Iron Man 3, where Adrian Toomes, Michael Keaton's soon-to-be-Vulture character, is running a salvage operation, which gets taken out from under him by the Department of Damage Control, lest exotic and supernatural tech fall into regular human hands. The DODC, or a subsidy of Stark Company and Toomes, is pissed off by the DODC, and losing out on a ton of money from having the job taken out from under him. He decides then to keep some alien tech for himself, and he and his buddies will use this tech to toy with in short enough time. Toomes uses the tech to become the Vulture. We then see Peter Parker, played by Tom Holland, his home video catching us up on what has happened leading up to and during the events of Civil War from his perspective. It's also used as an alibi for Tony and Happy to cover for Peter Parker, Tony playing the reluctant mentor role here. Definitely don't do anything I wouldn't do. There's a little gray area in there, and that's where you operate.
Yep.
So those are the two main, or three if you want to count Mr. Stark himself, essential characters of this movie. Instead of getting another origin story, we're fast-forwarded to an already established Spider-Man character having been around the city of Manhattan, saving the little people and confronting the baddies on the streets. What Homecoming instead chooses to focus on for our new age Peter Parker is his balancing being a borderline Avenger with being a full-time high school student, complete with evolving maturation, feelings, and relationships, both platonic and romantic alike. As far as being an Avenger, though, that's where the action part of this genre-bending coming-of-age Avenger action adventure movie takes the main focus. Toomes isn't your enslave-the-world type baddie. As a matter of fact, he goes out of his way to keep his profile low enough so as to never make waves with the Avengers, knowing that were he ever to encounter them, this jig would be quickly up. But that annoying neighborhood spider guy keeps popping up and getting into his business, especially when it comes to Toomes' biggest plan to date, infiltrating the Avengers' invisible aircraft while in transport to their new home in upstate New York and stealing some of their tech to improve Toomes' weapons and sell more of them. So Spider-Man has to use all his Spidey powers and senses in order to stop Toomes and safely procure the Avengers goodies in the process. Difficult enough to do alone, doubly difficult when you add the fact that the father figure Tony Stark had recently scolded Parker for becoming too big for his britches and endangering an entire ferry full of New Yorkers in trying to apprehend Toomes' goons once already, specifically against Tony's warnings and wishes, leaving a mess for Iron Man to have to clean up, but also not easy when it's revealed that Adrian Toomes, wouldn't you know it, is also the father to Peter's shiny new girlfriend as well.
Spoiler!
Boy, the homecoming dance is going to be a real blast.
That was a fun spoiler.
Yeah, that was a nice twist. That was not something I saw coming. But as far as this movie overall, not an intro story. We don't need to see the spider bite Peter, which was nice.
This was fascinating to me. You usually had, in the other Spider-Man movies, Aunt May as the mentor character, Uncle Ben yeah. as the mentor character who dies like, you know, Shmoby Wan Kenobi in the middle notes. Of the movie. Yeah. Right? But you don't have that.
Nope.
You not have at all. This story not seeped in the Spider Bites Me origin. You have this story based on Avengers 1. And I thought that was fascinating. Tony Stark is your mentor. The source of the villainy is coming right out of the New York alien technology yep. from Avengers 1. I thought that was it. So it fits in the MCU. They reclaim Spider-Man right off the bat.
Yeah, and then they genre bend. They don't just stick with a strictly action base. You have the comedy, like you said, on the cast and crew recount. And this is a coming-of-age teenage drama. You know, I mean, this is about going through life in high school. You have a lot of the tropes hit on. The best
friend. John Hughes story.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. And it proves that Marvel can do anything they want at this point.
And they weaved a superhero story in with a movie, like you said, a coming-of-age plotline that builds to the prom, that builds to the homecoming dance.
Yeah, the big
dance.
Homecoming dance. It's amazing. It, what they did is nothing short of spectacular.
That title's a double entendre, you see.
I don't get it.
So Michael Keaton's crew takes the alien technology. You would think this movie was going to take off with Civil War, but it didn't really do that. Beyond the Peter Parker having a good time during the Civil War video. So that was fun. They took like the fun part of Civil War.
Yeah, and that was the only really, I mean, that was the part that Peter Parker knew about anyway. So
right.
He doesn't really have a lot to do with Civil War. I was fine with that, with them just
taking the whole video. And there's no big aspect. Tony Stark post-Civil War speech either. They saved that for Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah.
It's just Tony Stark.
Because he's going to die.
But it's fascinating to me how they just basically said, all right, we're only servicing the Spider-Man storyline, Spider-Man character. We're going to take something fun from Civil War, that big airport battle. We're going to take Tony Stark being the mentor character, kind of likes Aunt May because he's somewhat single.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know
he's
at that
playboy.
Point. He's a playboy.
That's what he is.
So we're going to have fun with that. But we're going to ignore all the stuff between Chris Evans and Iron Man. We're going to make Chris Evans as a cameo character just be funny in those videos
mm-hmm.
that Hannibal Buress, the gym teacher, has to show at detention.
So your body's changing.
He points the wrong way to the gym teacher. Your teacher here. So all that stuff is great. So it's fascinating to me how you have Avengers Infinity War coming up, but they're not spending any time dwelling on a serious setup to that in this movie.
You've dealt with the last couple movies, Tony's deteriorating mental state. You don't really have that here because the Peter Parker character wouldn't be exposed to that.
Right.
He only sees Tony Stark as this shiny golden statue, the man that he wants to be and work for and at the adulation of. So he's not going to be privy to Tony's deteriorating mental state or anything going on with the drama between him and Pepper. Pepper just kind of shows up at the end and everything's, all the bridges have been fixed there between she and Tony, and that's fine. So it's, I like the way it was handled. This is from Peter's point of view.
And it's such a surprising mentor character because who's been screwing up the most? It's been Tony Stark. You
and
know,
it's a reclamation project for him because he keeps referencing how his father never really did these things for him. So he's trying to do right by Spider-Man. And even though Spider-Man, Tony's trying to give him an attaboy, and Spider-Man's like, I got to go because he's in the middle of trying to save this fairy
yeah.
and apprehend Toomes' guys.
Totally yeah. not on the same page, the whole early portion yeah. of the script. And I'm not going in for the hug. I'm just opening the door.
Getting the door for you.
This is funny stuff. I love the fact that Tony's the mentor because it's so unlikely. He's such an unlikely mentor, as I said, but it's also a bad sign for all us Infinity War Tony Stark fans because here he is playing the surrogate father. There he is finally getting the proposal to Pepper Potts at yep. the end, which is like, it just
nothing
feels
left for him to do.
It feels rough.
Yeah.
It feels rough.
Time to check out.
Oh no.
That sucks. I like the nods to the past before we get into best scenes, worst scenes.
Yep.
They kept the, during the opening credits, you had the old school Spider-Man, that the Spider-Man. Na-na-na. They played with that jingle.
I heard about people who cried during that.
You have Tony saying, you know, I wish you would just be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. You have them mocking the upside down kiss that Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst did in the first Spider-Man
right.
made with between the Liz character and Peter Parker here. They mm-hmm. had a lot of nods to the past. I thought that was really cool for longtime watchers of fans of not only of Spider-Man, but of the movies and of Marvel movies and whatever.
Right.
They really did a credit.
She's
going to
kiss him and then he falls down the elevator shaft.
Genius. Yeah.
That's funny.
So yeah, let's do best scenes, worst scenes. What do you have for, let's start with the best. the favorites.
I love how they create dilemmas that escalate in this movie. It's my favorite aspect of the story structure. Peter has some tough decisions to make. He has decisions. He's torn in multiple different directions, like coming-of-age characters are.
He's torn in multiple directions.
It's a beautiful job, and they should have called this Spider-Man Paradox.
Yeah. Oh, God, you would have loved that, huh?
No, I would have hated it. Homecoming is the paradox of the film. I mean, it's it's great writing, and I love the fact that you have a conflicted villain, a villain grounded in some very positive choices, right? He's making choices to help his family. He's Walter White. Yeah, he's broke bad. It's a great point. And it is Michael Keaton, who's never really played villains in the role.
In the middle of a big career renaissance, who's crushing it. I mean, crush it. We're going to say this. I'm going to say it for sure. I'm going to try to convince Mike to. But, I mean, these three movies are the best villains we've had in the MCU so far. By a mile, I would say.
And it's fascinating how it's almost like Marvel goes back and forth. We'll talk about it in Ragnarok. They go back and forth between the everyman villain mm-hmm. who breaks bad and the maniacal, crazy god.
World slaving. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for sure.
It's fascinating.
But the Tombs character is my favorite quote unquote scene of this. You hit on it. I think the reveal where he's Liz's dad at the end was a nice touch. The tension throughout that car ride when he's taking them to homecoming and he figures out that Peter Parker is Spider-Man and Peter Parker figures out that Tombs is the Vulture and they're having this chess game of like talking to each other around Liz.
And Peter's basically giving up his youth to do this project of Spider-Man. You're like, can you defend your home, but you have to give up your childhood.
Yeah.
You have to give up your youth and in order to maintain whatever semblance of home that you think is worthwhile. You have to not have a relationship with your aunt, your surrogate mother, in order to keep her safe from.
You can't chase your dream girl at the homecoming dance because you got to leave to go chase down the baddie father immediately.
And it's just escalating to the point where he screws up in the process. Like, all of the dilemmas aren't caused by the villain. Like, it's in combination with Peter Parker's screw-ups.
It's his fault, yeah. It's his coming of age. Yeah.
Again, that's just great writing. I mean, this is
because
this
the villain is faulted. I mean, he's a human being. He's trying to make right by his family, but he knows what he's doing is bad, and that's why he wants to stay out of the Avengers' purview. I mean, he knows he shouldn't be doing this. He's a rational human being, and I think that's what makes him probably the best villain in the MCU for me, because he's actually layered. He doesn't want world domination. He doesn't want blind power, and he's just a guy trying to make right that has to do what he has to do. I mean,
he's
your
girlfriend's dad.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, this is as close to a John Hughes, even a Lady Bird type of script.
Yeah.
Because you need to be totally empathetic towards the villain, and they make that happen, and they dial it to 11 because it's your girlfriend's dad.
Yeah.
So I love that fact. I loved all the high school asides. I loved all those jokes. There's a ton of little moments in this movie that are really funny. I loved all the friendship stuff between Ned and Peter.
Guy in the chair.
That was just really great payoff. Then I love the big action scenes in terms of my best scenes. I am a big fan of the harrowing in-the-air, mid-air battle. I'm a big fan of the Vulture squaring off, crushing him under the rubble of the...
You know what I really like about the mid-air battle most, though, is that the whole coming of age story was Tony's message of if you're without the suit, you're nothing. And that's repeated a couple times, especially when he's crushed under the pile, the parking garage that fell on top of him, blah, blah, blah. And you're at the point, the pivotal scene, the big climax, your hero, your protagonist has to fend for himself. He doesn't have his spidey skills, really. His web is pretty much useless when he's holding onto the plane. Yeah, he's got his physical manifestation that he can hold onto the plane, which no human actually could, but he's just relying on himself to basically get by. I thought in the non-Spider-Man outfit, he's just himself.
I love that they took
the suit
away. I
thought it was great, great screenwriting.
They took the suit away. He had, right when he was just starting to learn the suit.
Yeah.
And so you get the crescendo of him mastering the suit and all of its powers. And then boom,
And figuratively and literally losing everything to him and having to make do.
Yeah, I mean, he's making Iron Man-like decisions, almost keeping the boat intact.
Yep.
And again, a screw up that he makes and combined with the antagonism forces the third act, which is wonderful.
Yeah. And the big battle scene between Toomes and Spidey at the end, where he's still trying to save Toomes' life. Your wing is going to explode. What are you doing? Trying to save you.
Yes. And then Toomes actually, as well in the final scene, makes an interesting decision. He could kill Peter, mm-hmm. right? He could just stand there and kill Peter. He does not do that.
Because he's a good villain.
He's a good villain. He does the treasure of the Sierra Madre yep. thing. No, let me just try and get away yes. with one last score.
Time to go home, Pete. Yep. Oh, my God. Yeah. I didn't give this movie enough credit the first time I watched it over the summer. And doing this rewatch leading up to this movie, the complexity that's in this screenplay is phenomenal.
I think it's much better than Logan. In my mind, this would have been a big best adapted screenplay, which we'll get to in a second. Yeah, any worse scenes there, Mike?
I had only a couple. When Peter leaves the homecoming dance and he's fighting Shocker. And Shocker's, you know, throwing school buses at him, and nobody in a school full of people comes outside. What's that noise? You know, like
they're playing the music really loud. Yeah, I guess.
That was a little much. But the ending was a little clunky. The very end, where Tony wants Peter to do the press conference, but Peter doesn't want to do the press conference, but they're okay with it. But they actually still do have the press conference set up for him to do it. And it's like, what's the game plan here?
I don't disagree with that. I mean, they basically outed all of the Avengers up to that point. They all live at the Avengers facility. I think it makes sense that Tony would announce that, you know, he's got a new Avenger. He needs some good PR for the Avengers.
Yeah, but he took it all in, like when Peter's like, I'm not going to do this. And Tony's like, oh, yeah, it was a test, but then it's really not a test. But Tony's fine with it.
The whole movie, you know, basically Tom Holland is looking for some fatherly admiration from Tony and right. recognition. So this was going to be his big, look at this kid, applaud the kid moment, right?
Right. But he just takes it in stride. He's like, yeah, whatever. Go ahead. You're good. Go ahead. You can leave. I'll take care of this room full of people that I gathered just for you.
Yeah.
It was just clunky to me.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it's not a big gripe.
It worked for me because instead of the admiration, he wants to remain the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Yeah. So Peter leaving his kid responsibilities gets a little tiresome. Like he's always just, like, I think they run out of excuses and he just like runs off. I like that they escalate even the kid problems. They right. escalate them. And then they slam together with the Michael Keaton character. They slam together in Act 2 with the screw up that he has and leaving the alien bomb mm-hmm. or the alien tech in Ned's backpack puts his whole class at risk.
Yeah, we didn't even really talk about the happenings at DC with the Washington Monument and all that. It was obviously...
That really worked for me. That too. Really worked for me. And that was a crescendo of that suit. And mm-hmm. then he screws up there and he screws up worse mm-hmm. with
Fairy.
Fairy. It's a tough call for me rating this movie as an opening with Black Panther. But I think Black Panther is going to edge it out. We'll get to that.
Oh, Black Panther edges it out.
I don't know because I was just in awe of the writing of this movie.
I will say this is... It's so unfair because of what I'm going to say about Thor Ragnarok, but this is probably in the top five of my MCU rankings if we do that, which we're planning on doing. I'm really surprised by the screenplay, like I said. So if we're doing Oscar lens, I would obviously go adapted screenplay there. Michael Keaton, in our first episode, I said he should have been up for Best Supporting Actor.
You had him.
I cooled on it as the year went on. No, he should have been there. I mean, especially in this year with the kind of a weakish field that we all agreed it was.
Yeah,
he definitely. I mean, he carries that whole persona beautifully.
And if you listen to our Best Supporting Actor pods, we had him in our top 10. We had him in our honorable mentions at the Mike and Oscars. You had him a little higher than me, but I still had him top 10 myself. I agree. He was up there. I think this movie was my number 11 on my list at the Mike and Oscars. It was very high for me.
Oh, you mean of the year?
Of the year.
Oh, cool. I thought you meant of MCUs. Yeah, no, that's good.
Mike and Oscar episode number 51, if you want to listen to that and see the rest of our list from 2017.
Re-ranks, yep. That was fun.
And the visual effects were great. Better than Kong Skull Island, maybe. I can't say they were better than Guardians, Last Jedi, Blade Runner, Apes. You know, so
I would give Guardians the nod, of the MCU movies there.
Anything else with Oscar lens there, Mike? You definitely...
No, Keaton and Adapted were the big ones. I could do the Stan Lee cameo was when Spider-Man's causing a ruckus on the ground. One of the neighbors looks out his window. It's
nice.
Stan Lee, nice job. Way to go, Stan. Here's your check. Thanks for showing up. Post-credit scene one, Toomes is walking into prison. He's approached by a guy with a very ominous scorpion-looking tattoo on his neck, saying that we hear that you know who the Spider-Man is, and Toomes says he doesn't know who Spider-Man is,
yeah.
Meaning that he either A, wants to cover for Peter, or B, wants to kill him himself. See what happens there is if Keaton's still involved in the MCU later on. Post-credit scene two, Captain America in one of those fluff videos talking about how patience is a virtue and it's good to have patience even though sometimes it doesn't pay off or lead to anything, meaning that you're not going to get another post-credit scene. You waited around for nothing. Ha ha.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. Chris Evans, some good jokes in this one.
We'll move on to Thor Ragnarok, number 17, closing in on the end of this MCU journey. What do we have, Mike?
Cast and crew for Thor Ragnarok, directed by Taika Waititi from Flight of the Conchords, Boy, The Inbetweeners, What We Do in the Shadows, and Hunt for the Wilder People. Hunt for the Wilder People, one of my favorite top five movies of a year ago. Definitely check that out if you like this movie. Taika Waititi is currently in post-production on a What We Do in the Shadows TV movie, and he is in pre-production for Jojo Rabbit, which is a World War II Holocaust drama where basically Scarlett Johansson and Sam Rockwell, I guess, are parents, and they're hiding a Jewish child during World War II. Awesome. I was shocked to read that.
Some light family fun fare there.
Is it going to be a comedy? Is it going to be a dramedy? I can't believe it. Anyway.
Maybe we don't make light of World War II and the Holocaust. I don't know.
Is he going to have, Australian Flight of the Conchords wit involved? My God. I was shocked to read that. But Sam Rockwell, Scarlett Johansson, Taika Waititi forming.
Is there any doubt Sam Rockwell plays a racist in that movie?
Maybe he's going opposite of racist, yeah, and he's the helping out the Jew.
Trying to rectify his public image there.
I don't know. I'm so surprised about that one. Writing credits for Thor Ragnarok go to Eric Pearson from Agent Carter, Craig Kyle from the first two Thor movies, and Christopher Yost from Star Wars Rebels, Logan, and lots of Marvel TV series, cool. Cartoon TV series. Stan Lee, Larry Lieber, and Jack Kirby also get nods with writing the comic books. Thor Ragnarok stars Chris Hemsworth with Tom Hiddleston returning as Loki, Idris Elba as Heimdall, Anthony Hopkins as Odin, Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange, and Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner / Hulk. The series adds Kate Blanchett as Hela, the villain in this one, Odin's daughter.
Very cool villain.
Carl Urban is her reluctant sidekick, Scourge.
I didn't even realize that was Carl Urban until the movie was over. And I went on the IMDb page, the cast list. I was like, holy shit, that's Dredd?
That's Dredd. Tessa Thompson bursts onto the scene as Valkyrie in a star-making performance.
Great.
Jeff Goldblum is the Grand Master.
Why take another role after this? Just let this be your career from now on, Jeff Goldblum.
Rachel House from Hunt for the Wilder People and all of... Taika Waititi's movies is Grandmaster's sidekick, Topaz.
Yes.
And Taika Waititi does the voice of the Rockman Korg.
His voice is like sweet tea, just soothing, nice to listen to.
There are also some funny cameos, which I'll reference in a few minutes. Box office for Thor Ragnarok, budget was $180 million.
So we're still hovering that $170, $180
million. Yeah. For the third film in a trilogy, I was surprised to see it under 200, but domestic cum was $315 million, international $538.9 million, for a worldwide total of $853,977,126.
Doesn't do $900 million again, so Taika Waititi will never work in this town.
The closeout of our 2017 Marvel movies, we had three: Guardians, Spider-Man, and Thor Ragnarok. Thor was the ninth highest grossing film of 2017. Ninth! At almost $854 million. So yeah, movies are dead, Mike.
It's a shame. I mean, the cinema's barely holding on as it is.
Domestically, Marvel had the fifth Guardian, sixth Spider-Man, and eighth highest grossing films of the year, with Thor being eighth. Disney also had one and two with Last Jedi and Beauty and the Beast. So giving them one, two, five, six, eight.
I just thank God a small... mom and pop shop like the Disney Corporation is finally finding its footing and doing something to make itself money.
Insane. Insane in the membrane. Here we go. Critical reception for Thor Ragnarok. Rotten Tomatoes, 92%, 7.5 out of 10 critic score. 87%, 4.2 out of 5 audience rating. IMDb was a 7.9 from 300,000 to... Why can't I say numbers today? 302K votes. Metascore was a 74. Cinema score was an A for Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, I mean, you're hitting all the familiar notes. This is, Marvel releases a movie. It's well received. It makes a shitload of money. And critics even start to love it.
But not awards chatter as of yet. So only won a few. It won a Golden Schmo for Best Comedy and Best Trailer. Two Golden Schmoes, that is. It won an IGN Summer Movie Award for Best Comedy and also the People's Choice Award at the IGN Summer Movie Awards. It also won an Image Choice for Best Supporting Actor, Idris Elba.
How long before these are taken seriously as big movie events and the best stories of the day? It has to be this year, right? I mean, Panther has to have finally broken that glass ceiling.
If it's not Black Panther, it's got to be Avengers Infinity War. We'll talk about it next week. But
man. All right.
The guys with writing credits aren't known for great comedies for Thor Ragnarok. So it's of no surprise to me that my one production nugget is that Taika Waititi really punched up the script. However, it is surprising to me that Marvel Disney allowed Taika Waititi to kind of do the free range, punch up the script, slash improvise lines.
Yeah,
slash
get more comedic and lighthearted.
When Disney Lucasfilm didn't allow the...
The guys doing the Solo story, the 22 Jump Street guys. Yeah,
the 22 Jump Street guys to do the same thing with Solo.
Different people. It's a good point. And also, you've seen Marvel, Disney have issues with directors being too involved or wanting to change too much and going their own way in the past. I just referenced Edgar Wright with the Ant-Man saga a little bit ago. So, yeah, I wonder what Taika Waititi did. Maybe it's all in the way you smooth people's egos, too, behind the scenes. Who knows?
Very, very interesting to see how Marvel's developing. And it's a little scary to see that Lucasfilm is not necessarily buying into all the Kevin Feige modus operandi of success.
There are a couple problems.
This is our first time we're worried about Lucasfilm and Disney.
There are a couple problems, right? with Disney in general. Yes. Them owning every property I can think of being an issue.
But faith in Kathleen Kennedy as well. Mike, you got the plot premise for Thor Ragnarok?
Yeah, I'll talk about a quick plot overview here. Thor's back and trapped by Surtur, a gigantic hellish-looking demon who he thought Odin had killed millennia ago. Surtur warns of Ragnarok, the fall of Asgard. The visuals in that opening scene, by the way, are stunning. Though Thor is able to defeat Surtur and capture his magical helmet in the process, things both around Asgard and the Nine Realms at large seem to be off. For starters, Odin has let the Nine Realms fall into a bit of despair, more slow to act as realm-hopping peacekeeper than normal. Of course, Thor figures that this has more to do with the fact that, you know, Odin hasn't really been Odin at all, just Loki in disguise masquerading as Odin as he has been since the end of the Dark World. Instead, the real Odin is stowed away somewhere in Norway, who Thor and Loki are able to get to thanks to some quick help of Dr. Stephen Strange. Odin, as he always seems to, has some warnings for his sons. Asgard is in trouble. You have an older sister, Hela. She's the goddess of death, and I'm going to turn to ash or powder now, and she's going to come take Asgard for herself immediately after. Also, she can stop and crush your hammer with her bare hands. See you later, bitches. Due to fighting while traveling to the Bifrost Bridge, Hela gets to Asgard to implement her new rule, crushing all those that dare defy her will. Meanwhile, Thor, and it later turns out Loki, end up tossed into the garbage planet of Sakaar, which is run by a Grandmaster who relies on hired scavengers to bring in warriors to fight for their freedom or riches, much the same way the old Roman gladiators did. All Thor has to do to escape the Grandmaster's clutches is beat his long-standing champion, who happens to be Hulk. This leads to Thor rounding up his own troop, poorly named the Revengers, consisting of himself, Hulk, Valkyrie, the scavenger who brought Thor in and former warrior of Asgard herself, and his brother, who you know is just itching to turn on him again, Loki. A big battle rages on Asgard once Thor and the Revengers do make it out of Sakaar, complete with Skull soldiers, a gigantic werewolf, a mess of spikes and thunder, and a giant fire demon Surtur again. Thor wins, but Asgard the planet is completely destroyed. Boy, then it's a good thing everyone repeated over and over again in the third act that Asgard is the people and not the place then, huh?
Anthony Hopkins was a bit Basil Exposition in this movie.
Yes.
As well. However, it was nice that they had a reversal at the end. I'll get to that. So the genre of this movie is a little bit elusive to me, but it reminds me a lot of Guardians of the Galaxy in terms of its space opera-ness.
Sure.
You have a band of screw-ups in on this team of Revengers, and you build them up as screw-ups. You have a maniacal god slut type villain like Ronan was in Guardians of the Galaxy, mm-hmm. who doesn't need a ton of exposition, which allows Taika Waititi just to get into the fun of the story, which I appreciated. Like, we didn't have to have a 30-minute prologue from Anthony Hopkins to describe the Hela character. We just see in snippets.
But you didn't
see visuals. We see a visual of the Sistine Chapel, yeah. right? Which I thought is really smart writing in the sense that they gave Cate Blanchett perhaps the most efficient villainy of That's a funny. Marvel,
I have
Marvel
that,
movie.
I have it as it could be a worse scene. It worked for me too, so maybe yeah. it's better received than I thought. But I thought the exposition of the Hela character was a little on the, it could be taken on the nose. I thought the Sistine Chapel.
But the efficiency, Mike.
I thought it was
we need more time
shot.
For Australian jokes.
Right. Like I said, it worked for me. I could see people having an issue with it. I didn't personally, but I thought that there being a whole gigantic mural painting under a gigantic mural painting was a little much and a little direct, but it was fine. I had no problem.
It was cool. And then the payoffs of it were like some of the best visuals of the year. I said this in the Mike and Oscars. I mean, those shots of the Valkyrie charging Hela just blew my mind yeah. on the big screen on IMAX. I love those shots so much. The slow-mo of it. And again, you're accomplishing in pictures so much more than you would in Anthony Hopkins' first 10 minutes of the movie. Explain Lord of the Rings, yeah. Peter Jackson talking about the wars between these civilizations, the wars that Hela fought. I mean, he's accomplishing in 5 minutes what those other movies had to take 30 minutes to do.
Yeah. No qualms with anything you said. It's really a beautifully shot movie. It's a pretty well-presented story. It was good. I have some things. Some
well, it's fine.
Quibbles.
Did you laugh at it throughout the plot?
Yeah,
I mean, if it's not your cup of tea in
I
terms
did,
of...
I did, but it's so unlike what I thought it was going to be as far as tone. It is the goddess of death.
And you have Flight of the Conchords
yeah,
jokes.
And a rock guy is doing one-liners throughout the majority of it.
Yeah. To me, this hits a lot of my sense of humor. So I'm laughing throughout this movie the first time, even last time. So just it kind of makes me happy. The fact that I get a Planet Hulk adaptation that turns it into a bit of a space opera, men on a mission kind of team-up movie made me very happy.
Borrows from the Guardians and its use of modern day songs or classic rock songs. Led Zeppelin's a big influence
yeah,
in this one.
That
was awesome.
The payoffs in this movie are really fun in terms of the action spectacularness. I'll get to that in best scenes. Thor and Loki build up a good kind of comedy duo kind of thing in this movie.
I mean, at what point does Loki stop?
Like, are you just fatigued with this
I'm
movie?
Because
this is like the
Loki.
Culmination. Well, Loki's is as funny as he's ever been. Thor knows his tricks now to a T, to where he bounces off
right
well,
that
funny
that was funny. It's good that Thor doesn't get taken by surprise by him anymore, but it's like, you know, man, at some point just pick a side.
Well, these Logies, they got a mischief. I mean, if the jokes don't work for you, I get it, but if the jokes work, they really used them well at the beginning for
well
certain.
here was my problem.
Let's talk about that first scene though. Did you laugh at Matt Damon?
Oh yes,
Scotty
yes,
doesn't
Luke Hemsworth,
know.
Yes.
That dude
that
has more out of left field cameos yeah. than anybody. I think that's what he wants his trademark to be in his career.
Yeah, that was very funny. Luke Hemsworth getting some play as his brother there was very funny yeah. playing Thor. Sam Neill making the appearance as Odin on stage.
I mean, they're writing a story about the death of Asgard, right? The planet, the whatever, the kingdom,
Asgard's
the
a people, it's
the
not a unit,
well, the universe of the setting of Asgard.
Yeah,
it's the depth of that. And they do it, again, in snippets of exposition, rather, which basically characterizes Loki right from the start.
Yeah, it does. They do a good job of setting it up, and I did like that about Loki, how he's masquerading. I like that the menacing ending of the Dark World where Loki is just running Asgard is written off almost immediately in this movie, where it has no lasting impact whatsoever.
Yeah, there's no Dark World necessary here.
It's a good movie. I said this to you at the start, though. The only problem I have with it is so many people I've talked to before I sat down and watched this movie all the way through from start to end for the first time. Everyone said, oh my God, it's one of the best Marvel movies. Yeah, it's probably a top 7 Marvel movie.
You got overhyped?
It's not like I was expecting like a top 3, no doubter. And it's not. There's maybe, nothing better movies.
Maybe
out
you're
there.
Fatigued. Maybe you didn't like the humor as much. Maybe you're a big jerk. I don't know. But I love that Thor and his friends are outmatched by the villain and they have to outwit her, which is great writing. Again, it's a feminist statement in that regard, making a female villain that just overpowers younger brother in that regard.
Love the way Hela was treated as a bad guy. Love the respect she was given, the agency she was given. Loved it all.
And she's just given immediate credibility because of the way that character has a swagger, because of the fact
that
they write it so strong so early. She breaks the hammer. Yeah. She's on the Sistine Chapel of the god that just rules the world and takes over the world for her father. I love the revisionist history aspect of all of that, and I think it's a really smart way to say Taika Waititi is just writing off the prequels, which I liked.
Yeah, he definitely did, without question. He established his own vision in his own world and answered, did dust aside the two previous movies.
And you know, it's the third movie, so you got to have Thor recognize his full power, full potential. Yeah. So for him to become...
Especially with Infinity War on the horizon.
For him to become the God of Thunder with Immigrant Song.
Are you the God of
slow
Hammer?
Motion. Yeah, in slow motion, darkly lit, cloudy.
That was awesome.
I'm like losing my shit during those scenes. You also have a lot of comedy with Banner and I'm kind of getting to my best scenes, I guess, now.
No, we can do it, because you're hitting all the best scenes I have, too. So
the Banner-Thor stuff made me laugh pretty hard.
Thor pleading to Banner, pleading to Hulk first that he likes Hulk more than Banner, and then pleading to Banner that he likes Banner more, just politicking his ass off, trying to get into whoever's good graces for whoever fits him. That I like because it showed the juxtaposition between Thor and Loki aren't that separated on the spectrum. They're both willing to do what they need to do and say whatever they need to say to get to what they need to go. So that was kind of cool.
The Hulk that only says smash, that only snarls in the Incredible Hulk.
Okay.
Talk about not getting it right, not having getting it right. Well, and I'm talking about the Incredible Hulk with the second movie of MCU, Ed Norton movie. That got it so wrong. This movie, you have Hulk as a meathead at your gym.
Yes.
So they figured out the character so well. Like you had... It's built on the Joss Whedon characterization, of course, but it's built for comedy, and it works in terms of his characterization, because in the end, you have Hulk almost ruining the overall plan and going after
Skurker.
Yeah, at the end, that was great.
Big monster.
Yeah. What are we doing?
That was very funny. I loved it for this reason. It shows Hulk developing. It took 10 years to get this Hulk, which I think works because... It shows Hulk being able to control himself for the first time since Ed Norton smirked at the camera at the end of Incredible Hulk.
Right.
Like, we have 2 or 3 movies where he's just this out-of-control monster, and he finally, after a decade, and after years in space, is being able to kind of control himself a little bit. Make him more...
Like, but not enough to where he just flops like a fish on the... Right.
The first Avengers movie, he's out of control, and they don't want the Hulk to come out, but now he's like a legitimate weapon that Bruce Banner is learning how to use for his own good. I loved the character development of the Hulk character here in this
movie. To put Banner on edge, he's got to be Hulk for 2 years. That's great writing. Yeah. The Jekyll and Hyde finally took over, you know, so again, they're taking Hulk to another level. They're really doing a nice job moving these characters along. And as a Planet Hulk adaptation, it still works somewhat for me there. I don't know the source material that well. I think I glanced at the comic, basically structured in a graphic novel at this point at the library at one point. That's where I read my comics, the library. I'm such a dork. But I get a lot of good comic book reading done at the library with the big books.
No, we got it. We heard you.
best scenes. I laugh at the Jeff Goldblum stuff. I'm sorry. Oh, he's going phenomenal. He's killing me. And I think
that's what I say. This hysterical. Is a really good movie. Very enjoyable, and it gets high marks from me as well. But yeah, everything. I think the visuals are on par with anything Guardians has done, which I think Guardians is the standard bearer for visual effects so far in the series.
Nice.
Jeff Goldblum, amazing. Tessa Thompson, amazing. Like you said, it's a breakout performance for her.
I love their escape through the devil's anus, that whole sequence.
That was a little, yeah. I mean, yeah, the sequence was phenomenal, but that's the best you can come up with. Like, you're dealing with Hela, goddess of death, Skurger, all these fantastical names.
But they
that's the devil's anus.
But the jokes kill me. Like, they're on this orgy boat. I mean, come on. And he's getting chased. And then Jeff Goldblum's like, oh, well, please celebrate the Hulk. And then he's like, oh, well, please, everybody go and get them. I'm laughing throughout. And then it's fun because, you know, he and Tessa Thompson kind of team up. Bruce Banner's finally getting his crap together to get them to go back into Devil's Anus, which brings them to, back to Asgard there. So I thought that was fun. And then you have him and Loki kind of have some funny stuff there. Let's play the game, whatever the con that they're going to play.
And Hulk does.
He's hurt. Help, he throws help. Loki at somebody.
We're not doing it.
We're not doing it. Help. And he just throws Loki at the bad guys. That's fun. That's freaking deadpan comedy. That kills me.
More stuff I like just to wrap up best scenes. Heimdall plays a very intricate role in hiding the sword the whole time to make sure Hela can't access the Bifrost Bridge. I will take anything that gives me Idris Elba in any kind of role, especially a badass ass-kicking role. Good with it.
Yeah, I love Idris Elba all the way back from Luther, and he crushes it again. And that award is worthy.
The ode to Willy Wonka that Thor goes on before meeting the Grandmaster, going down that ride.
That is so funny.
Which direction he's we are screaming. Going. It's basically that scene from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Everything on the trash planet, to me, was funny. From the Rock character to the Loki stuff to the Grandmaster stuff to the planet.
It was
Hulk,
funny. I'm not even going to say it was out of place, because it wasn't.
Well, Bruce Banner just getting mad in the conversation after, you know, Tony's clothes are riding up on him. And then he's just like, I can't. I've been asleep for two. I'm on an alien planet. And his face, he gets the green vein. Oh, that kills me.
So this movie, definitely worth your while. I'm not going to say it's a disappointing movie or a bad movie. I mean, disappointing in the sense that everyone was telling me that it's a slam dunk, but it's a really good movie.
What about a dunk. It's just not maybe a 10 for you, but it's a dunk. Yeah,
that's probably fair. That's probably fair.
Yeah. If it wasn't an A, it's got to be a B+, is my guess. Yeah. So, I mean, we both liked the movie. I mean, the finale was so good, though.
That's one of my worst scenes, but it's not. I mean, there's no worse scene.
What didn't you like about the finale?
But I don't understand how everyone just kind of agreed with, yeah, we don't need this place.
Trash planet?
No, I'm at Asgard. The planet of Asgard.
Oh, well.
The ending of Asgard. How they're just going to let Hela and the fire monster kind of blow it up.
Why I think it's a space opera in terms of structure. It's, again, you know, space operas are all about planet arrested hopping. Development youth, right?
Right.
Where you have to let go of your home to create a new home with your new friends and then your creation of a new family. So I think that's important to the genre and basically getting at that. You know, through Asgard, through all this stuff is a wild way to get at the space genre thematics. And I think that's fascinating.
I think I'm let down by as badass as they made Hela to be, because she is an awesome villain. The ending isn't, and maybe they bring her back. There's rumors that she's going to be Mistress Death in the second Avengers movie. Maybe it's in the Infinity War. I don't know. But they don't let Thor or Loki beat her. They just kind of let her fight for herself and hope that she's out of power.
What I think is cool about it is you have an overpowering villain for once the overpowering villain is dealt with. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Is dealt with in a way where you have to outwit her. You can't overpower her.
Yeah.
And you have to sacrifice something very dear to your heart in order to beat her, in order to beat Hela, your sister. You have to sacrifice your family home to go off with your friends.
Yeah, you're making good points. You're making really good points. You're right.
I mean, it may suck.
No, it may just be
painful, is what I'm trying to say. It may suck for you.
Yeah, it's a bit disappointing. But again, they do leave you enough rope to have her maybe come back later on, which I would like to see, because these three, between Vulture, Hela, and Killmonger, awesome villains.
And how about, you know, you think you got another Indiana Jones just rolling rock set up for a character with the Thor opening? again, Serta becomes the most important character of the movie. Yeah. That's your smoking gun to beat Hela. Again, Marvel with that first scene. So let's watch very carefully Avengers Infinity War, what that first scene is. That first scene is going to be important in the next movie as well. But that was just fascinating to me.
I can tell you what the first scene of Infinity War is going to be. It's going to be Tony tinkering with his heart piece in the middle. No! I'm just trying to make it super. You idiot! You idiot, Tony! You're going to kill yourself!
Oh my God, sailing away with Pepper Potts before Thanos gets there.
For real. Can we just not, just stay alive.
Just don't destroy your suits.
Dear Russo brothers, can we have a quick rewrite?
Nah, he's done. Yeah. I think he's done. Ugh.
All right, so let's go to the Oscar lens here for Thor Ragnarok. Listen, this is one of your favorite movies from 2017. You were all about this even way back in episode
48, yeah. Our 2017 superlative show, which was the precursor to the Mike and Oscars. I know there was some Oscar fatigue there when we did our year in review series. So if you haven't listened to those, go back and do so. 48 and I think 51 are our 2 year in reviews. Thor Ragnarok got a lot of the precursor awards for me. I loved its poster. We loved its trailer.
Yes.
In terms of the visual effects, I put it up there with Blade Runner. I thought the world of this movie. It was my second best adapted screenplay on the year. However, actually analyzing Spider-Man Homecoming, I think Spider-Man Homecoming is up there too. That's a battle for second place. But all the tricks in terms of the screenwriting in this movie are just so fascinating to me. Like I mentioned, all the ways to be efficient with the villain to just get to the fun. I thought they're brilliant and they're so effective.
Yeah, you actually hit on, I think, the biggest thing that I've considered a disappointment for this movie is that in my rewatch of Spider-Man, I saw so much good and was blown away by so much that I didn't catch the first time.
Right.
That I maybe was jaded by seeing this and it kind of didn't live up to expectations. So maybe I think it's more disappointing than it was. It's not. It's a great movie. You said, though, you think you would have trouble putting it above Spider-Man for adapted screenplay. I don't think I can. I'm with you there.
The two really well-written scripts. Yeah. But here's the thing. Like, you rank these two movies with the third Iron Man and the first Doctor Strange, or even going way back, the first Thor. Like, in terms of a origin story, like this triumvirate of movies is just so above the other trios for me. And I just think the MCU and their principles and their go-to methods are so much better now. I mean, they're creating such higher quality movies.
It's unbelievable what this company has done in terms of taking these cartoons and these comics and bringing them to real life, from the casting to the effects to the side characters and the underscard of the cast list. They've been aces.
So to me, it's ridiculous that this did not get visual effects last year.
Nothing has been more solidified to me than we need two separate visual effects categories, because Marvel, it's on a different playing field. Marvel and Star Wars need their own category. They should be battling every year.
The Annie Awards make a lot of sense.
Right.
And the Visual Effects Society Awards make a lot of sense. And a lot of times they acknowledge the Marvel movies. They're not afraid to, you know? I mean, so very weird.
But if nothing else, if absolutely nothing else from this movie, it's another step in the direction of these are critically beloved properties. These are good movies in total. They're telling complex, layered, and mature stories about mature subject matter and not
genre
just
movies.
Yeah.
That's what's
genre so bending too. Yeah. They're everything. So we're establishing a track record to get to the Academy, which hopefully our 18th and final movie will finally break through this year. We'll find out at the end of the year as Academy nominations are announced and released. Two quick things, like we always do at the end of these, the Stan Lee scene, he actually gives Thor's haircut. Yeah. He actually plays an intricate role in the plot for the first time, I think, in the MCU. He is the old man that's prepping Thor for battle and registration and cuts off his hair.
My hands are not as steady as they used to be.
So that was fun.
Yeah, it was funny.
Post-credit scene one, Thor and Loki stare out into space. Loki questions whether it's a good idea for Loki to return to Earth. Thor says everything's going to be fine. And then they see a gigantic menacing ship.
Which is Thanos's?
I believe so.
Mike. So that was like perhaps the most
telling,
the foreboding, most impactful, that's a great word.
Thank you. Once in a while.
Post-credit scene, yeah.
So who knew? Bringing Thor with the little intricacies is bringing a lot of the importance in the MCU. They got the haircut, they got Thanos' ship. Post-credit scene two, the Grandmaster stumbles out of a broken building. This is people approach him who have started the revolution spurred on by the Valkyrie and Thor and saying, rise up and take down the Grandmaster. And he says, hey, great job. Let's call it a tie. Yeah,
it's funny
that
to
was
me.
Funny. Yeah,
it's
that funny was to funny. Me. Yeah.
Some people hate Jeff Goldblum.
No,
some people...
Goldblum. I don't want to see him. I don't want to see another Jurassic Park. I don't want to see another Independence Day. I just Goldblum needs to be this character forever.
He's another like Jack Black type, not to total different world here, but I would rather him be a C-lister than an A-lister.
Fair, yeah.
I'd rather him be a character actor. At a that's a zone.
Yeah, that's a fair statement. I approve.
So we covered Black Panther in a 2-part movie event review a few months ago. This was episodes 42 and 43. Check those out. But I think
I'm going to toot our own horn. We were really good in those episodes,
though. I think so too. I think we were fun. I re-listened to those before this.
Also, I am sexy. I'm a good-looking man. I'm perfect in every way.
Do you want me to sing Right Said Fred right now?
If you wouldn't mind, I could get my strut on. Go ahead.
So check those out. But I think this like review is to refresh you a little bit. I'll be a little bit repetitive in terms of cast and crew because we want to gush over them again. But I also want to update you on some kind of principles that really have worked in the Marvel universe that we didn't identify in the first reviews that we did of this because we didn't analyze the whole MCU like we have now.
Going to be a little different. Might be a little quicker. We'll see how it goes. But go ahead. Cast and crew, what we got?
Still no word yet on whether or not a Black Panther writer, director, Ryan Coogler will be back for a Black Panther sequel.
They have
to. Everybody is saying it's going to happen, but they don't add it to the MCU, which they're keeping close to the vest for the next phase, or, you know, the end of the next
they're
phase.
They're slow playing phase 4 or 5, whatever it is. They're not, they I kind of made a mission to say they're not going to reveal anything.
Big cats are going to be let out of the bag.
Once you these know, Infinity what, ones, yeah,
the,
I agree.
These next two, so... Again, Ryan Coogler, Fruitvale Station and Creed, very worth watching. Michael B. Jordan is in a lot of his movies.
His they muse. Got
another movie coming out together called Wrong Answer. Creed 2 is Michael B. Jordan's next project, as well as Fahrenheit 451 with Michael Shannon and Sofia Boutella, HBO miniseries that looks pretty good in its trailer.
Yeah, it does.
So Chadwick Boseman is T'Challa, Black Panther. We went through his full biofilmography in those two episodes, the first of the
There's
two episodes.
There's a good countdown. Which was the best casted Marvel role? Because they can't get better than Chadwick Boseman for this character.
What a great job he does. And just nailing the accent is so much
he's
fun.
He's unbelievable.
So he hasn't signed on to other movies other than these next two Avenger films yet. And that's going to be a big surprise for me.
I think he'll be taken care of.
I fully expected this whole cast to have, pre-production, announced. They don't have that yet in terms of their IMDb. So let's build up the rage for that. Like, why isn't Danai Gurira in 10 movies signed on for 10
more
movies?
Well, that's a good point. You're talking about outside Marvel properties?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, no, that's,
Lupita
a good
Nyong'o,
that's a good point.
Is not Nakia, and she's in the new Star Wars trilogy. She has Charlie's Angels and Little Monsters. She has the most stuff coming out.
She also was an Oscar winner prior to signing on to this picture.
Right, so, but yeah. Danai Gurira is still coming out in this Avengers movie. She's from The Walking Dead as
no, that's a good point. Yeah,
Michonne. She does not have
without
more
question,
stuff.
Should be more. All of these characters should be in more. Yeah. Properties, without question.
Martin Freeman is the CIA man Everett Ross. He was from Civil War. Carried over into this movie. Oscar nominee Daniel Kaluuya is Wakabi and will be a voice in the TV series Watership Down, which is a pretty big book, fantasy book, about rabbits and basically like Animal Farm, but with rabbits. It's been on my to-read list forever.
A book about rabbits has been on your to-read list?
It's like a fantasy... It's like...
Are they like guardian rabbits?
Fantasy canon. Yeah, it's the Owls of Gahur, but with rabbits. If you like bunny rabbits, you can read a fantasy book that's super a serious drama about rabbits. I almost read it like 50 times in my life. It's supposed to be really, really good, and they're making a TV series with Daniel Kaluuya voicing one of the rabbits. You also have Daniel Kaluuya being in Steve McQueen's Viola Davis Oscar contender extraordinaire for this year, Widow. So maybe he'll break through as a best supporting actor.
How many more times does he need to break through?
Right.
For Christ's sake.
Speaking of breakout and breakthrough stars, Letitia Wright played Shuri.
She was awesome.
In this movie, T'Challa's sister, Black Panther's sister, and Winston Drake is another new star as M'Baku, the neighboring culture, the gorilla culture, the mountain culture.
Yeah, one of the tribes. There's like five tribes. It's tough. I was trying to find names for the tribes, but I couldn't find them. I don't know if they exist in lore or not.
Right. Both of them are going to be in Avengers Infinity War. And by the way, Sterling K. Brown, Angela Bassett, Forest Whitaker, Andy Serkis, they're in this movie too.
Get Sterling K. Brown nominated for something. I mean, he deserves Oscar recognition. No more with this Emmy stuff. No more coming out parties. He needs to be in things, and he needs to
be
recognized.
He's a star in movies.
He is a stud.
Build franchises off of him. I mean, he's got 10 minutes in this movie, and it's perhaps the best 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
So, he's awesome. So, box office update. Domestic cum is 682.
Domestic.
International is 643. The worldwide total is now up to 1,325,776,898 as of Tuesday of this week. Third highest grossing film ever in the United States. First on the year, of course, thus far. Maybe Avengers will top it at the end of the day. Who knows? 10th highest grossing film of all time. In terms of its opening, to refresh you, its four-day total was the second highest all time. Its three-day total was the fifth highest all time. And it's the best earning film ever by an African-American director.
And what can you say? I mean, this is the mountaintop. It's a long time coming. It's way overdue. That this type of movie, this type of cast with an African American director, it's an all black ensemble. It's a black movie that's carried by black actors, and it crushes. It's well written. It's well directed. It's phenomenally acted. It has a huge box office following. What more do you need from a movie? Never mind a black white movie. Who cares? And this is a great movie. This
great movie
is an unbelievable cast and movie and precedent. I'm so happy about Black Panther
overall.
And it's
a story about a fantasy myth, right? The comic books are fantasy stories that has dispelled all these real world, real life myths of injustice and myths that are just been unjustly characterizing whole races of people acting and working in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's amazing. So it I guess money's going to talk in a big way so that we finally get more diverse casts, more diverse tentpoles.
Yeah, that's all it took, right? Was Marvel stepping in and actually trying to take a chance, quote unquote, on the taking a chance bullshit.
There's a lot of movies that have been. This movie comes on the back of many great
movies.
Oh,
without question.
From Blade to all the way here. And they've recognized that too, Coogler and Black Panther. And you've heard a lot of interviews with that in terms of the production and the promotional videos as well. They've been very, very complimentary of a lot of the greats. Up till now, from Sidney Poitier on down. I just think this is a touchstone moment for movie making and the industry, and it's gonna be that crossover film finally, no matter what Avengers Infinity War does at the Oscars.
What a time too. I mean, so Black Panther is gonna do it this year on the heels of Get Out doing it last year for a different subset and different way movies can be viewed, different way elite racism is viewed, both in society and on film. It's just makes me happy.
Critical reception update. Rotten Tomatoes was a 96%, 8.2 out of 10 critics score, 79%, 4.1 out of 5 audience rating. Obviously, more reviews have come in to kind of pull it down. I think we had higher marks in that two-parter. Mm-hmm. So, compare and contrast there. IMDb is now a 7.7 out of 10 from 232,000 voters. Metascore is an 88. Cinema score was an A+.
There you go. What more do you need?
The awards already. Black Panther has been nominated for 14 Academy of Science Fiction Awards.
It's been out for 2 months.
Right. And look at the other Marvel movies in terms of Academy of Sci-Fi, the Saturn Awards, right? 3, 4, mm-hmm. maybe 5, not 14.
Nope.
So this is going to be an Oscar player. Billboard Music Award nomination for Top Soundtrack as well.
Kendrick Lamar, it was a big deal when he got signed on to do it. He was very happy and very proud to be representing. He was in charge of the whole soundtrack.
Yes, sir. So Kevin Feige had said in interviews recently that there are, quote, many, many stories to tell about Black Panther, and that Kevin Feige wants Ryan Coogler to return, but no deal has been struck yet. Black Panther has announced that it will be released on video and digital media as soon as May 15th of this year. So we are almost in May, and it's still top 10 at the box office, and it's going to be released on video on May 15th.
Yeah, and then it's going to go on to break all kinds of Blu-ray and DVD, digital streaming.
So that's a major testament to its earning power. Last weekend, it was still sixth at the domestic box office.
That is amazing. Yeah, still a top 10 movie.
Last weekend, $8 million in earnings. The weekend before Avengers Infinity War, it's still making more than $10 million a week in the domestic box office.
So we're going to assume everyone's seen this. If you haven't seen it by now, just based on pure excitement for Infinity War alone, if nothing else, you have to have seen the last Marvel movie before Infinity War to go into Infinity War.
Got to see it. And it's still in theaters for you to see it. So yeah, this is full spoilers like all our reviews have been for Marvel. So here we go.
Yeah, I don't have much. I mean, we've beaten the plot to death a couple times. I mean, you all know the story by now. Wakanda forever. T'Challa is my king. Killmonger wants to claim the throne as revenge for being cast out and left behind by King T'Chaka, who's T'Challa's father. What is the right way to rule when you sit on a throne backed by the most powerful resources in the world? Do you stay neutral and keep it to yourself, as has been the preferred way of T'Chaka and T'Challa? Or do you arm your forces and brethren around the world, sending the message that it's just for their protection, but knowing full well what the implications of spreading such desired and powerful assets out in the open will be? Thus is the Killmonger preference. The same preference his father N'Jobu had, which was discovered and treated as treason, leading to his death at the hands of former King T'Chaka. It's a fight for the rightful heir, the biggest fight of ideology this side of the Civil War in the MCU, and like two opposing warriors pacing on either side of a track while the train passes through, it's a fight that only has a matter of time before it gets resolved physically or otherwise. That's Black Panther. That's your setup. I mean, we covered this. Covered it in depth, like you said, episode 42 and 43. We have a non-spoiler and a spoiler episode dedicated to it.
So I think the addendums are what's most fun after our other 17 movies. I think that's where that's where we can add some review power, critical power here. I wanted to touch on a couple things because this movie hammers some now MCU staples that we can only realize after analyzing the rest of them. So come with us on this little affirmation project, this affinity project. We have a prologue. We have a prologue in this movie that becomes the most important scene of the movie.
Yes. Right?
And
yes,
that is something that just happened in Thor Ragnarok. It happened in Captain America Civil War with Tony discussing to the public at MIT there, you know, his last scene with his parents, his last memory of his parents gone in a different way that you'll see three different times in terms of Winter Soldier's last memory. And then you'll see, of course, the video by Zemo that makes the conflict happen in the final act. So this is certainly the driving force of the movie. 1992 prologue, Michael B. Jordan has to relive it. Forrest Whitaker has to relive it. It's just such a strong piece of writing that I think is going alone, and forget the rest of the movie, that just masterpiece in terms of working in a prologue into all three acts of your story. It's remarkable writing. It's going to get it in a Best Adapted Screenplay nomination right there. I wanted to talk about, and you mentioned it before the show today, I wanted to talk about the villain of Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger Stevens.
Awesome.
And is this the best three villains we've had in a half a phase?
I don't think there's any question. I don't know. I mean, who are you going to compare it to? Loki is the only one with any sort of depth of range of emotion and motivation that these three have. I would say Vulture, Killmonger, and Hela to an extent. Hela, you can argue, is a little motivated differently, but Loki's the only one that stands up in a test of time. I mean, who's battling these guys for best baddie? Red Skull?
Yeah, and the thing is, again, Marvel kind of alternates between horrifying god that wants to destroy or wants to self-destruct something like Caecilius and Doctor Strange. He wants the whole world to self-destruct, right?
Right.
Annihilation.
Start
style.
Over. Yeah. You know,
ego's
the same, yeah.
Ego's the same. Everything to be me. You want But you also have origin stories and first of a series that go like Thor 1 did with Loki as the villain. It wasn't executed well enough, but a very, you know, relatable villain. You have, even to a Tony Stark, you just have a businessman pushed to 12 mm-hmm. with Jeff Bridges in Iron Man 1. Now you have Spider-Man Homecoming, perhaps the most relatable villain thus far, the villain that you're almost rooting for, yeah. and Michael Keaton, you're rooting for them to get along, but now you have even more, where I agree with Michael B. Jordan's villain speech.
He was wronged,
and he has the right idea, right? Yeah. Like, you help the people who are suffering around the world, Black Panther. That's what you should be doing with your power. That you should be taking it to 11. This is Martin Luther King versus Malcolm X kind of stuff. This is Spike Lee, love, hate, Radio Raheem kind
of
stuff.
Well, regardless of where you fall on the argument, I mean, just on a basic human level, he was left behind by his people. Yeah. They turned his back on him.
His dad was murdered.
Yeah, his dad was murdered. And he was left as a baby to basically fend for himself in a world that's not his.
So now this movie goes to another level where it dissects how to understand that plot line, how to understand that villain's motivations. And the ends don't justify the means for Michael B. Jordan's character the same way that the ends don't justify the means for Michael Keaton's character. That doesn't mean the villain is pure evil. Again, that's great writing.
Yeah, no, they're complex. They're actually very complex. They're capable antagonists, which is what you need most out of an antagonist in a movie, especially in a superhero movie.
And I felt like Doctor Strange was kind of missing this. Like, if they went with the Chiwetel Ejiofor as the villain in the first movie, in the first Doctor Strange.
But then you wouldn't have had the story to back it up. You wouldn't have had him substantiated as a character.
I guess you're probably right. You could have built, I guess you had to have an evil god in the first one. To do the world building. Yeah, I can't make an argument against you. That's a good point. Spider-Man Homecoming. Tony Stark is the mentor, Black Panther, Andy Serkis and Martin Freeman coming through this story. So you have where it fits in the MCU. You have those characters being
reintroduced. The Ultron. Andy Serkis character is back doing what he does. He's dealing in vibranium still. And even he, I mean, you think he's already been introduced. Okay, he's being positioned as the big bad, but he's nothing more than a pawn for Killmonger as well at some point. And Killmonger even uses him as a trophy.
Right, and you finally learn what's so good about, you know, Captain America's shield, the vibranium mm-hmm. shield, so that's backstory. So this movie connects in many ways in terms of where it fits.
I think it's the most complete script MCU. In the MCU.
Yeah.
We can get in the best scenes if you want. We already covered them in the other, you know, if you want to just go in the Oscar lines, I don't know.
I had listened to our two-part review for best and worst scenes because we gush. We quibble a little bit with worst scenes. We do have a couple things to point out in that regard. But, that's a full wall-to-wall review. We reviewed all the production values and everything. So Oscar lens, Mike, I think we're both on the same page. This is going to get nominated for a lot of them.
This has to be a Best Picture nominee. This has to be a Best Picture nominee. This is the crescendo of everything leading up. Not only is it a sorry for taking so long to Marvel overall, but you have the minority slant on it. You have this big, powerful pop culture movement on it. You have these huge characters that people have fallen in love with, like they did with Heath Ledger's Joker,
right,
that has kind of taken over. How many Black Panther masks and stuff are we going to see out in Halloween this year? How many Killmonger masks? How many guys are going to dimple up their chests?
Oh my
to
God.
Go topless, you know, and show
not
off
you
their
and
abs?
Me, hopefully.
No, absolutely not. But, you know, I mean, this has gripped the world. It's one of those movements. All the pieces are there. This has to be a Best Picture nominee.
Agreed. That's all I got. That's it. You spoke it. I agree. That's it.
I love this movie.
Yes, a lot of fun. A lot of fun for the third time too. So yeah, it's my number one movie of the year thus far. My number one director of the year thus far. My number one contender for best adapted screenplay thus far. That's some of my only entries in the acting categories as well thus far. I mean, I've only seen 50 movies on the year in 2018 already. A lot of those are those Netflix movies we've been doing and reviewing.
Right. And this kind of is a little better.
A little better.
I would like to see, you know, I'd love to see Coogler up there, obviously. I'd like to see Michael B. Jordan. I don't know that it's going to cover all categories. If it does, why not? But we talked about in our preview show, the year in preview coming up, there seem to be a lot of heavy contenders towards the end of the year, as there are every year in the cinema.
Yes.
Cinematic view. So we'll see how those hold up.
I think it'll be harder for some of the acting categories to happen for this.
Yeah, but, I agree. But
the others are going
to. This has to be Best Picture. This has to be a Best Picture nominee. It has to be.
Best Picture, Best Director, Best Adapted Screenplay. I can't see how that doesn't happen.
Stan Lee cameo. He's the guy in the casino. He's a big spender with ladies on either arms. Okay. The casino scene. Post-credit scene. Bucky Barnes seems to be back to 100%.
Yes. Okay.
And he's ready to go. And we're headlong into Infinity War.
Big connection to... it's a bridge from Civil War to the Infinity
War.
Yeah, and
you're establishing Black Panther as the guy holding it all together. Because he's the bridge that's going to bring Bucky back to Cap. And he's going to bring Cap and Iron Man together to face Thanos. He's the guy that's holding this all together. So you're giving him so much importance that when you do kill off Tony Stark and Captain America, which is going to happen in one way or another, either this movie or the next, you have a guy ready to go. Leave. As the face of the franchise going forward.
Yes.
And it's couldn't be more well done.
It's going to work.
So that's it.
We did it.
We're done. 18 movies and 6 episodes. That's your MCU review. You are now a Marvel master. You are a certified genius to go forth in the world and face Thanos on your own with the other Avengers by your side. You can go into that movie theater for those 2 hours and 40 minutes and see what happens with those Infinity Stones and that glove.
I can't wait. Can't wait to see the Avengers Infinity War. I'm proud of us right now because we handled this in a very MMO way. We kind of did the standard MMO review, you know, the highlights of that MMO review. So if you like the way we reviewed these movies, spoiler filled, you know, hopefully you can take the jump with us, take the leap with us to our spoiler free reviews where we kind of get more into the production profile side of things and kind of inference what's happened. But when we do a movie event, we'll have a spoiler section. We'll have a deep dive just like we did here. And this was fun because it was a connected series that we can really compare and contrast these movies with. So we're going to have, after Avengers Infinity War, after that review we're going to put out next week, we're going to rank the 19 Marvel MCU movies.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm excited to do that. And something like this kind of event doesn't come around every year. So it's nice to be able to sink your teeth into it. You know, The Last Jedi was a big deal. This is a big deal.
Let's culminate 18 movies. So we couldn't miss that chance to review that. Mike, you know, your willpower was outstanding not to watch most of these. You watched some of them.
Yes,
you
couldn't. I've seen some, but yeah, this is my first time powering through. It's amazing. It's a totally shift in the paradigm of cinema and movie storytelling, and it's just Kevin Feige's a genius, and he'll never have to work in this town again, and he can probably just, you know, sleep on a bed of money.
After which phase is he content? That's what I wonder.
That's a good question. That's a really good question. And does he stick this out forever and ever, or does he get the itch like most artists do to create something new?
Yeah, it's amazing. I wonder if, you know, he doesn't want to stop until Fantastic Four is involved and X-Men is involved and he gets it all
together. The whole All right, so let's do skip non-Marvel properties that aren't under the Marvel Studios umbrella yet. X-Men in a Marvel Studios Kevin Feige vision. The Spider-Man world, the entire Spider-Man universe with all the bad guys, Sinister Six, Venom, Carnage in a Kevin Feige universe. Fantastic Four in a Kevin Feige universe.
I think Fantastic Four would be my favorite. I love the cartoons.
Really?
When they were involved in the cartoons. X-Men is it's been done so much that I'm a little worried. However, I will say, I will see X-Men, I will buy Fantastic Four, and I'll probably skip Venom for a while because Tom Hardy, Venom, that looks so bad so worried about it.
I'm shocked. Yeah. I think I would skip Fantastic Four just because I love Silver Surfer, but none of those other guys.
I like the team up. I like the comedy. When Fantastic Four is right, it could be like Guardians of the Galaxy.
I think I would buy Spider-Man and see the X-Men, but those are interchangeable. And I think I might have just made myself sad by saying it out loud.
I want to go with you because those were my two favorites as a child.
Yeah, cartoons growing up after school every day, man. But yeah, we're going to see what happens. Infinity War is going to answer a lot of questions and probably ask a lot more. And, oh boy. Get your
Can't wait to that for that review.
Pay your last respects to Tony Stark, I think.
Oh my God.
Send roses. We'll see what happens. Tell us how you thought. Tell us how excited you are for Infinity War and your thoughts about the movie. Obviously, we'll have a review for you in the coming days. Let us know what you thought about this or any of the other MCU or retrospective reviews that we have done. We're going to get back into the Oscar lens of things soon enough. This one kind of was an Oscar feature, especially Black Panther. We talked about it in a two-part episode. I have a feeling we're going to talk about it again at the end of the year when the Oscar sprint previews come into play as well.
Yes, sir.
So let us know that and anything. You can contact us, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MM, and Oscar on Twitter, Mike, Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com, Mike, Mike, and Oscar.com, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Reddit, anywhere you are. If you type in Mike, Mike, and Oscar, we should show up. Feel free to give us a review, rate us, like us, subscribe, tell your friends. Honestly, every single person that you do tell and that does listen into even one episode of us, we truly and honestly do appreciate from the bottom of our hearts.
And if you came to us as a Marvel fan for this series only, you know, check out some of our other stuff. We're going to cover the crap out of the Oscars, but we're going to do the movie events. We want to be a year-round movie podcast, so we're not just going to be the snooty critic that just does the bougie films.
No,
you know, we're going to do all kinds of movies, and we're because that's our taste, and we kind of, you know, showcased what our taste is after this movie as well, after this movie series.
That's right. So, like we always say at the end of every episode, guys, reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us. Enjoy Infinity War. You know we will, and we will speak to you all soon. See ya.